What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is March 30th, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball. Oh, AJ Puck. Oh, boy. Yeah, this wasn't good. Two innings, four runs, three hits, six walks, one strikeout. Oh, man. So, every year I do this. This is my, I guess, my 11th season of running, or I guess doing pitching analysis as I started this in 2014. And the worst part of what I do is when I am so wrong, at least out of the gate, where there's a start where we're really excited and then they just fall on their face and everyone goes, whoa, okay, hold on. This can't be right. Right, Nick? And this was really bad. Now, it wasn't so bad in the first inning. It was one walk with a strikeout. Struck out his first batter of the game. Really nice slider. And almost got a second one, and then it really fell apart in the second, and then he came out for the third, and two walks with a single and a double knocked him out of the game. So, is this AJ Puck? Is this the guy that we drafted? We drafted, like, what, like, 14th round at most? At the highest? Like, I don't know. Probably not. It's really hard, and it's really difficult to, you know, I mean, I don't want to belabor this very much, but obviously I want you guys to understand I'm the one that is in most pain here because I can just feel all of the anger of a lot of people who have drafted Puck and are now dealing with, oh gosh, I picked the wrong horse. Nick said that this was a guy who's going to be good to go after. And what I saw in the spring were a couple of things. One, a pitcher validating the 75% strike rate that he had on both of his fastballs with a low arm angle and a lead extension. And having good command with that, that looked like a high strike rate with a slider that still had its 60% plus strike rate. That looks like a guy who mixing in a changeup in there, maybe a curveball. Yeah, this looks like it's going to be solid. He didn't look out of character in the spring. He would go five innings, zero walk games, everything like that. And here's his first game, and he goes six walks. What's going on? The Occam's razor here that some people are trying to go to, saying, oh, yeah, he's the same guy he's always been, which doesn't make sense to me because last year he wasn't this. The real Occam's razor is, yeah, it's a small sample of a guy who is making his first ever start in the first start of the year in a home crowd in Miami. He's not, you know, he's going to be affected by emotions in some way negatively. And I look at the schedule and I say, well, you've got the Angels next. Are we really going to drop Puck for, say, Garrett Crochet, who looked great, don't get me wrong. Did not have the greatest command ever, but no, he threw all the strikes and had a fastball that was coming with amazing extension, good IVB on it. The whole thing that you really want with Crochet-ish, not everything, not the best attack angle. But he has to get Atlanta next. So here we are in the first week of the season. And we're saying, okay, cool, I want to drop Puck. And I actually honestly am totally fine dropping Puck in leagues. It just is about who you're getting. Like, for example, if you want to go for Tyler Wells because he has two starts in the across the next week against two weak opponents and it's the Orioles behind his back, yeah, that's great. I'm totally fine with that. Same with Tanner Houck doing the same thing. Or Reese Olson, something like that. Absolutely. Just if you are dropping Puck, make sure you don't get stuck in the yo-yo. And what I mean by that is it's really easy the first 2 weeks of the year to keep picking up guys and rotating between them and not getting any starts out of it. Let's say you go and you drop Puck now and you pick up Crochet, but you don't want to start him against Atlanta. And then he doesn't look good against Atlanta and you don't really like him. Then you drop him for someone else who did really well. And then you realize that you're just not getting any value. That's really hard to do. So all in all, when it comes to AJ Puck, I'm at least going to hold on to for one more start with the Angels. I don't like the fact that he looks like he's going more over the top this year than he did last year. I don't have height-adjusted VAA quite yet. Why we don't have it up on our site yet is because we needed a larger sample to be able to do that because it's an average and we generally need just more pitches to establish what that is. But we're changing it slightly to make sure that we do get that up sooner. And we should have it like tomorrow or something like that. But my guess is that his 1.4 mark, which essentially establishes to me, hey, you do have a flat four seamer that would work really well upstairs that Puck used to have, should probably be closer to the 1.1 that he had in 2022, if not underneath it. So if Puck has like a 0.9 or a 1 in the HAVAA, I know, essentially says, hey, this is kind of average now when it comes to flatness, which means it's not really affecting anything. And that means that Puck's four-seamer, well, doesn't have elite IVB. It just has elite extension at 92-93. That wouldn't be good. I would not classify this as an elite four-seamer. And if he's going to pitch really with like four-seamer sinker and then relying on the slider, then I actually would be worried, because that is a skill difference that isn't just, hey, this guy had a fluky game of six walks. We just know he's not going to be. So that's the main thing that actually it would be the biggest deterrent. But again, it's the Angels. I know this was the Pirates yesterday. If you threw more strikes, you would have been fine. I think against the Angels, you're going to be okay. So that's my AJ Puck take. I understand if you don't agree with it. Really, it's okay. This is not inside the top 40 or top 50, right? I just really can't emphasize that enough. This is not someone that you drafted to be on your team for the entire year necessarily. We were excited about him. And I don't know where we're going to get moving forward. Let's move on to everyone else from yesterday. We have George Kirby looking great. He actually walked two of his first three batters, which is so weird for a guy who had sub 20 walks last year. Jason Collette was texting me about it, and he was just couldn't believe it. And I agree, that's absurd. But hey, eight strikeouts, because he got 9 out of 29 breaking ball whiffs. That is not typical George Kirby fashion. That's slider and curve. Oh, thank you so much for that. I really, really hope that he breaks out of that 25% strikeout rate, a mark that we saw before. It makes all the sense that he should. It's what we really drafted him for, expecting that. Zach Wheeler versus Spencer Strider was as advertised. Both of them got 18 whiffs, by the way, both getting a share of the gallows pole. For Strider, it was a two-run shot and a fastball, and that was it. The curve and changeup actually had a very low strike rate, sub 50%. I think it was like 43% strike rate. Not good. We talked so much about it. I mean, he was SP1 anyway. It's just kind of funny to me. Yeah, that kind of happens a lot. It was only 15% usage. Obviously, we hope it gets better moving forward, but yeah, still not refined there. Well, Zach Wheeler, yeah, tons of strikes in his secondary. 7 over 10 on his splitter, 9 over 10 on a sweeper, and his 94-95 mile per hour four-seamer, that is normally like 95-96, closer to 96 for Zach Wheeler. Yeah, that's still one of the best in the game. 11 over 45 whiffs, that's over 23% swing strike rate. You love to see it. He's so good. Christian Javier. Oh my gosh, Christian Javier. Oh my gosh. 6 innings, 0 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts against the Yankees. But the thing I've been talking about this spring for Christian Javier, I saw a 4-walk game with 1 strikeout. No. The changeup is still good. And this is a huge difference for Christian Javier. Huge! Because last year, he struggled with not his 4-seamer. Even though he was a tick down last year with his 4-seamer, doesn't matter. It still had the same results. And same ability. It was all about his slider. It was a low strike pitch last year on 55% as opposed to the 61% it was before, 63 maybe. And he didn't have any support for that fastball, but now he did. And even though the four seamer wasn't well spotted, just 1 out of 32 whiffs in this, we still had a 6 strikeout game with 5 base runners and 6 innings and 0 runs for Christian Javier. And the slider went 57% strikes. Yeah, because his changeup was 68% strikes. He has the complement. He has the piece of the puzzle. Oh my gosh. And just imagine if Christian Javier actually is spotting that four-seamer as he wants and goes more than one whiff on a pitch that normally goes like, 13-14% swing strikes. And it could even be higher if he's spotting that with this changeup. Oh, I believe in this pitch. This is like a huge, this is a huge deal, guys. Okay. I'm buying this for Christian Javier everywhere. I'm so in. Bobby Miller against the Cardinals got the win. 6 innings, 0 runs, 2 hits, 1 walk. Yeah, yeah. Oh, what? 11 strikeouts for Bobby Miller. Yes. Yes. 9 whiffs, though. just 9 whiffs. No. I mean, called strikes, obviously. I'm a big fan of CSW, of course. Shocking, more than 11. A couple things to note. One, less horizontal movement on his four-seamer, but more IVB. An extra inch is up to 17 inches about on that pitch is huge. And he's nearing 50% high lock. He's still underneath. He still has the same low lock of 30%, which is annoying. And it's not quite just like, you know what? I've got a flat four seamer and I have 17 inches of IVB and I throw 100. Like, yeah, maybe you should just be throwing it upstairs. I don't know. Anyway, stupid Dodgers. The slider is actually acting as a cutter now, which I do understand why he's doing that. Bobby Miller does believe a little bit more in his changeup and his curveball as more of these low whiff pitches. And the slider wasn't very reliable last year. So instead of trying to turn that into a whiff pitch, which he should because it's so filthy, he's then turning it into a strike pitch with a cutter, essentially. Which, fine. I'm okay with that. Just got to be a little bit more accurate with it. But yeah, I'm okay with this. It's lost like 4 inches of drop. He's coming in about 1 to 2 ticks harder. And I'm just waiting for that secondary to really destroy is the thing. Because even if you look at like Spencer Strider's four-seamer, that's amazing. He has a slider, though. The slider is actually the true whiff pitch. It's like a 30% swing strike rate. Last year had like 11 whiffs or something yesterday, right? That's the fastball sets up that. But the thing is, Bobby Miller doesn't quite have that absurd secondary that just destroys guys yet. That's the last piece of the puzzle. But Nicky just fanned 11. I know. That's about the four-seamer getting more vert and being a little bit more high-located, which is great. That's the first piece of the puzzle of him becoming like a top-five pitcher in the majors. I mean, really, 2025 Bobby Miller is like, I don't know, it's like Zach Wheeler. I'm not even joking. Bobby Miller is so stupid good. Merrill Kelly against the Rockies. 6.2 innings, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 0 walks, and 8 strikeouts. Yeah, it's Rocky Road. We're cool. Everything's fine there. He actually did the Cannibal McSanchez here by throwing high cutters a ton, which worked really well. And that was pretty cool to see. I wonder if that's going to be a major approach for Kelly, who throws like a 91, 92 mile per hour fastball. Got more whiffs on it last year. He explained it as like, oh yeah, because I guess my changeup was doing better or something. He didn't really know why. And that makes me feel like, oh yeah, that's not going to be an 11, 12% swing strike rate pitch again. But having that high cutter, well, that's pretty good. He also like definitely avoid the middle of the plate. It was really cool to see. Good stuff here, Merrill Kelly. He should be generally safe, and I moved him back. Like, Merrill Kelly is a perfect example in the preseason of a guy that I will move up and down a lot because I'm trying to understand just how generally productive his consistency is. Of like, yeah, I can go 6 innings, get myself wins. It's cool. I'm not going to destroy your ratios. And like, Berríos looked like that on opening day. And I thought to myself, oh man, I'm like way too low on Berríos. But then I realized, oh, right, he's a great undulator. He's going to have more volatility, I think, in season than Merrill Kelly. But then again, with Berríos, like he spotted pitches so well, absurdly so. And maybe that 6 round would be cool. Probably not. Aaron Civale against the Jays got the win. 6 innings, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. Just 5 whiffs and only 6 curveballs. However, he was doing such a good job of spotting his cutter, his sinker, and then leaning into his sweeper as the bigger breaking ball at 16 of those thrown. It was still sub 30% usage for breaking balls for Aaron Civale, but the cutter and the sinker were working so well. Yeah, that was good. You probably see a different distribution next time. We have a lot of other guys to talk about from yesterday's games. And of course, as always, I got to talk about today and tomorrow's streamers. So we're going to talk about all of that after this break. Nick Pivetta, 6 innings, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 0 walks, and 10 strikeouts, 37% CSW for a King Cole. This is just so good. The Whirly Bird is here again. 25% swing strike rate across 28 thrown of those. The four-seamer was upstairs with its great IVB. And what do you know? Curves and cutters, just under 70% strikes. That's just everything you ever want from Nick Pivetta. Now just do it consistently. I hope we can bank on Pivetta command. I really do. Freddy Peralta was absurdly good. 6 innings, 1 earned run, 1 hit, 1 walk, 8 Ks. Ace is going to ace. The thing that's really cool here is that he increases four-seamers IVB a ton. And here's the thing. Peralta, I talked about him being like an inconsistent guy. He had gotten into this incredible run the second half of last year. I didn't know if I could really buy into that. Generally, those kinds of runs reset. He's also a cross-body guy. He has a history of injury. So I wasn't super high on Peralta. I was probably lower than others. I had him like 20 or so. Some had him up as like 12 or 10. I understand why. I just felt there was more confusion with him. But here he is showing up with a four-seamer that notoriously has been very good because it's been flat and with extension at like 94, actually increased its last year's velocity and I expect it to be lower this year. It is slightly lower and might come down more after the adrenaline day one, but it's pretty much the same right now. This four-seamer has usually carried terrible IVB. We're talking like 14 inches of it. He increased it 4 inches of extra vertical break to 18. What? Like, I saw that and I thought, oh, he's clearly going way higher release point, like barely so. So his VAA, which is always elite, like really, really flat. I don't have the HAVA yet, but yeah, no, this is still going to be very flat. Oh my gosh. PLV, very small sample, but just inside of this game, made it a 5.93. I've never seen a four seamer for a season average a 6 or higher. I think DeGrom's hinted at it, but it hasn't. Cole Reagan's was 5.9, just to be fair. 5.93 for Freddy Peralta's is crazy good. Oh my gosh. So yeah, that changes things. Slider was good for strikes too. I saw on the board for the Mets game, James Schiano posted that they had like this IVB actually there. And they said it was like 21-22 on some of these. Like, that is just crazy, guys. Oh my gosh. Okay, not like not the Statcast one, the IVB-induced vertical break. So cool. Sorry to just gush about for Peralta, because like, you know, you have him or you don't. But still, that is awesome. Carlos Rodon, very interesting one at Houston. I was so curious to see if he was just going to show up and do the thing or not. And what is the thing that is actually sitting 95-96? After sitting 94 in the last one and not showing a single game in the spring where he was above 95. So it's 4.1 innings of one earned run, 5 hits, 3 walks, 4 Ks. So we're clearly not out of the woods. 20% CSW, 11 whiffs, 87 pitches. It was the Astros, but he sat 95-96. In fact, in the first inning, he was pumping 98 on multiple pitches. That was cool, but it did get lower as it went on. And that's atypical for Rodon. Traditionally, Carlos Rodon is a guy who starts slow and ramps up by the end. He actually has many games where his hardest pitch of the day is the last pitch he throws. So I don't know if this was just adrenaline and wanting to showcase this. It's, you know, it's first day of the year for him. First start of the year, I should say. It's the Astros. And then it did come down. So I'm not ready to just say, well, he's all good and healthy now. I need to see it stabilize a little. But this is an encouraging sign. Also, the cutter did look good glove side for Rodon. So I'm more intrigued now that this actually could be okay. Get there. It wasn't an amazing outing. 8 base runners and 4.1 isn't ideal. 3 walks and there are 4 Ks. So we're not quite like sold, but I'm happy to see that there is potential now for this to actually be it, as opposed to what we saw in the spring, which just wasn't that. Martin Perez against the Marlins. I was thinking maybe this could be a sneaky stream, is the very bottom of questionable. 4.1 innings, but it was 86 pitches. He just couldn't finish that fifth. 9 base runners, only 2 strikeouts. Yeah, he does get the Nationals next. Maybe that is also a sneaky one. Not the best command here, but there's a chance that that actually turns you into a win. Kyle Harrison was interesting here. So he's like the anti-Peralta. You'll understand in a second. You have this against the Padres. I wasn't in on this. I've been saying that I'm not in on Kyle Harrison, yada, yada, yada. 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 6 hits, 0 walks, 5 Ks. Nick, you weren't in on Harrison and he did well and you were in on Puck and he didn't. Okay. All right. One game. You guys know this. You know the drill. This is 5 whiffs, 30% CSW and 76 pitches. Also, by the way, something I like to think about a lot is like percentages of just saying you like something or you don't in this is just a game of numbers of these humans on a spectrum of percentage of success. But anyway, it's just fun. I don't know. Harrison looked not great. I'm not just saying that because it's Kyle Harrison. Like, the best thing he did was throw a ton of strikes with his fastball. And honestly, if Kyle Harrison's just kind of throwing in the zone, he's giving himself a chance, which he did here. This is good. And that's cool. Changeup was around and it was kind of nice to see something instead of the slurve, and okay, but that four seamer is supposed to be like everything for him. Like, that it is everything for him. It's supposed to be the thing that's like dominant and like, oh my gosh, I'm Kyle Harrison, try to hit this. Well, it was 5 for 55 whiffs on his four seamer, so that's a sub 10% quick maths there. And the IVB was so down, like we're talking third percentile IVB. Now, Kyle Harrison's more of a flat four seamer thing, so that's okay. But like, this is really flat now. Really like bad, like sink break. So that flatness, it is kind of interesting to say like, all right, well, it's flat, so maybe that's fine. I think the 5/55 whiffs kind of does show that drop in IVB is affecting this four seamer. And I'm glad the BABIP game worked in his favor. He didn't have a ton of ICR. It wasn't over 40%. So props to Harrison. Maybe this is just as fine and I'm overblowing this. But I still don't believe in the secondaries. And I think we're the same place we were before. Like, is he going to be this massive strike rate guy now? I mean, he's done that sometimes last year. So we saw in the spring that he was and he wasn't. I'm not going to buy it. Spencer Strider, we already went over that one. What am I doing? Jose Quintana against the Brewers, 4.2 innings of 200 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 4 Ks. Yeah, he's not in the command group that we want. He gets the Tigers. It's possible, and that could work out if it's a deep stream. Logan Allen was a stream pick of the day. Got the win, so we're cool. It was 3 earned runs and 5. You're not happy with it. It's just one extra earned run, and we'll take that all day. For the win, 120 whip is fine. 3 Ks, whatever. 14 whiffs is kind of surprising. He's more sweeper focused a little bit, and the four seamer got a ton more horizontal break to kind of look like a sinker, honestly, more than a four seamer. Maybe that works better for him. We'll see. He still looks like a Toby to me. Joe Musgrove gave us a scare, and he did in the Korea series. He looked really bad early on, where he didn't get I think I saw at one point 0 for 36 whiffs, I think across the first inning or two. However, 5.2 innings of 4 earned runs, 8 hits, 1 walk, and 3 Ks. 12 whiffs, 35% CSW. The slider and the cutter woke up as the game went on. I am not scared about Musgrove. It was a bad first inning, 3 earned runs. He led a home run to Chapman on a sinker that honestly wasn't that bad. Like, I was really surprised off the bat it went out. I thought it was just going to be like a flare to center or something. I'm pretty shocked about that one, but after that inning, yeah, it was 4.2 innings of 1 earned run and in 5 base runners, something like that. So we're fine, guys. Joe Musgrove, it's okay. I like the feel that he has for this cutter and a slider, honestly. Ross Stripling against the Guardians and wasn't good, so don't go for that. Zach Thompson against the Dodgers, of course, not good. His changeup looks great, but he's down two to three ticks on his fastball, and I can't buy into this. Cal Quantrill, no way. And then last but not least, you have Chris Bassett, 4 earned runs, 5 innings. He was looking good until it didn't. It's fine. It's whatever. You're going to keep starting Chris Bassett. Looking forward to today and tomorrow's games. I went over all the starts yesterday. Same stuff going there. So we're going to talk about tomorrow's. We have Bailey Ober, Michael King, and Chris Sale in that top tier, followed by in the probable start tier. This is kind of tough. Brandon Fott, who I've been notoriously down in my rankings, but that's for the full year. And he does get Rocky Road to start this one, which is nice. That's cool. We'll take that. The Rockies look really bad right now on the road still. Jack Flaherty gets the White Sox. You love that. And Tyler Wells against the Angels. These three amazing matchups, good winning offense behind them. Well, Flaherty not as much, but it's the White Sox. You're still going to do it. I trust the skills of him higher than Wells, who has a decent win chance, of course, being on the Orioles. You have Bryce Miller after that, because of the win chance stuff. Garrett Whitlock is our stream pick of the day, opposite of Bryce Miller. Trevor Rogers, Eric Fede against the Tigers. I'm going to go with that. Trevor Rogers against the Pirates. These are really just good matchups across the board here. The toughest one is Bryce Miller, where I'm assuming Rafael Devers will be back. And the last two, you might be surprised to see Gavin Stone at 11 as he goes against the Cardinals. And the reason for that is because I think the Dodgers might be a little bit careful with Gavin Stone in this first one. And he has the shortest leash, I think, of any starter inside the probable start tier. So he could be 4 innings and change. So just be aware of that one. And John Gray against the Cubs, that seems fine enough for me. Great offense. Probably should do some damage against Jordan Wicks. He can go 5 innings. Really good slider. And I initially had him in questionable start, but I thought, you know what? This seems like a generally fine start for John Gray. I'm not really too scared of the Cubs. Questionable start, you might have some streaming options with Carlos Carrasco and Nick Martinez if you're on a desperate Sunday here, because you got Oakland for Carlos Carrasco, and he's already switched out to 6 innings, and then you have Nick Martinez against the Nationals. It is in Cincy, and I hope he's not throwing 4 seamers, but Nick Martinez is not a bad pitcher, so that should be fine. Those are the two that I would think about for your win probabilities. If you have Clark Schmidt or JP France, I'm probably not going to start them. It is, you know, a duel between them, Astros, Yankees. I don't like either either guy going against those tough offenses. And then the bomb, does he have Brady Singer, who maybe he's just doing good enough against the Twins. No Royce Lewis, I think. Reed Detmers against the Orioles, I don't love because I think that Detmers didn't actually have that good slider come in his last spring outing. The rest of it arsenal isn't good, and it's the Orioles. And Tyler McGill could have it working with this four-seamer and the American Spork in this new slider that looks like a cutter. I just don't dig it. I don't think it's a very good fastball, and he doesn't locate it well. He gets the Brewers. I'm not a big fan, but I can see it working out for 5-plus innings. In the do-not-start tier, it's Bowden Francis against the Rays, Colin Ray against the Mets. Both of them could work out. Ranger Suarez against Atlanta because maybe the changeup's there, and Jordan Wicks maybe against Texas, and Bailey Falter maybe against the Marlins. Ryan Feltner against the Diamondbacks, like he has a flat fastball, maybe? All this stuff is very much do not start. You want to wait and see for Bowden Francis. You really do. He's never really started before. I imagine there's some shorter leash with this as well, and the Rays are good. Colin Ray is a very sneaky play against the Mets. I almost put him in questionable start, but I feel like the floor is too low. And then at the very bottom of this, there's Jake Irvin, no in Cincinnati. Paul Blackburn against the Guardians, no thank you. Tyler Alexander, who I think is going to be limited, not go five, against the Jays too. It's just not fun. Steven Matz getting the Dodgers, like that just seems no way. And then the Giants bullpen, because it's probably going to be bullpen games until Snell is ready, which probably should just be next week. All right, that is it for today. Thank you all so much for your patience on the weekends. My name is Nick Pollock. And may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.